It's time for Shake, Rattle, and Troll, a show for the serious fisherman, as well as the novice looking for tips from the pros. Shake, Rattle, and Troll is brought to you by Bill Luke Dodge Chrysler Jeep. Now, here's your host, saltwater fisherman and tournament pro, Don McDowell.
Yeah, man. Hey, I'm Don McDowell. Hey, welcome to Shake, Rattle, and Troll this morning. We've got JK in the house.
Fresh from the northern woods.
You were escaped from the woods.
Oh, man. And I'm going back. I'm leaving tonight. You know
I don't
that.
Blame you. I don't blame you. If Bill Rooley's in the house, you've got you're on your countdown to the U.S. Open.
Viva Las Vegas, brother Don.
No. We're supposed to be focusing on fishing.
Yeah, he's focused, all right.
He's focused.
I'm totally focused.
Casino Royale. Yep. Yeah, I can see this coming. So are you ready to go fishing?
Oh, man. You were at my house yesterday. You seen everything strung out in the garage.
That's what we do.
Yeah, I got
take it out of this box, put it in that bag, put it back in another box, and
back in the boat.
Yeah, back in the boat. Well, you only need a couple of things, a couple of bags of worms. How many days you fishing?
Total five. Tournament's three.
But, okay. Let me all right. We'll give it five bags of worms, three topwaters, two crankbaits, and
you're good to go.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
Now, are you going to give them the bag of worms that Mr. Perch gave you because you got whitewashed out at Roosevelt?
No, I keep those in my bag. I don't leave home without them.
Grim reminder.
Constant. Now, Bill's pretty good about it. He'll ferry stick now and then.
I got to go through the stuff and get rid of the stuff that catches fishermen and not fish.
That's hard to do.
Yeah. Well, I got a lot of that stuff. So.
Because, I think about half the crap that we carry in the boat is confidence builder.
Yeah, but
we're not going to use it.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem. It's like
if I would have only brought that.
Yeah, you got to bring everything, because I really believe there's going to be a lot of junk fishing up there. I mean, I think it's going to be totally different this year.
Why is that?
I think because that water is going to be so stained with all the rain they're getting right now.
They're getting hammered.
Yeah, they've been getting hammered, and
big time.
I think it's going to be a totally different ball game. Really,
that's going to be interesting. I just sent out a conservation update on what we're hearing about 2016
water levels.
We're 12 years into a 7-year drought already.
Right.
JK, what part of the country were you in yesterday?
I was between Heber, Overgaard, Sholo, points north, south, along the Indian Reservation with wild horses and Congressman Matt Salmon.
Nice. Well, we'll ask about the congressman, but before we do that, what's the water level in the tanks? I know a bunch of the AZGFD guys and some of the sportsmen have been hauling water into 4A, 4B.
If you go north of, if you go north in 4B, say 15 miles up the 504 road,
yep,
you're into dry country. Yesterday, when we were walking, stalking in the morning, first light, by the time I came
You've
back.
You've become a stalker?
Yeah. I'm a pretty good stalker.
Hey, he's on the right show.
Yeah, I fit in well here.
You do.
I was drenched from thigh level all the way down to the bottom of my boots. We were just soaked. There's water everywhere.
Nice.
Last night, a couple roads were washed out because we had to sit for an hour during just a monster downpour, and we finished hunting that evening up in some high cliff areas looking glassing, and as we were driving on, I said, let's go this way. We went down. The whole road was washed out. It was just a torrent of water coming across, and I said, I don't think we need to do that.
So after reading Blood in the Tracks, you're hunting the high Rocky Bluffs?
Yes.
He gave a lot of secrets away.
Yeah.
He really did. We're going to be talking to Jim Collier, author of Blood in the Tracks, about 8 o'clock, but I found that to be an extraordinarily well-written book.
It is. It is well-written.
I'd like to get an autographed copy for my brother-in-law for his birthday. Yeah.
Yeah, we can arrange that.
That'd be so cool. He'd love that.
Yeah, I haven't met Jim in person, but I've talked to him a number of times on the telephone, and we've communicated back and forth. My son and my eldest grandson, Mason, read the book.
Yeah,
before their deer hunt. And all it did was get them more fired up and kind of reinforce some of the things that we've talked about that I learned, my granddad taught me, I taught Donna. teaching Mason. So it's, you know, it's kind of a domino effect.
Yep.
And
not only that, it's stuff that you know you should know and you do know and you've heard it in the past, but it's assimilated all in. Would you like that word again? Assimilated nice. All into one nice package.
No. Mac Dictionary over here is... Yeah.
He's still looking up consternation.
Yeah. I love it.
You guys put the fun in dysfunctional.
Yeah, buddy. Oh, that was cold. But anyway, we'll be talking to Jim more on Blood in the Tracks. We're scheduled to talk to Andy Manal. You're going to be competing against Andy.
Oh, you know what? Andy's a tremendous fisherman.
You know, there's a lot of good guys up there. I like Andy. He's a lot of fun. Knuckles down, gets serious until he docks the boat, and then it continues. And then we'll be talking to Mark Lesang, Bass Angler Magazine, doing some good stuff. And then at the bottom of the second hour, James Guggenhauer with the Rim Country Fishing Report. And if time allows, Ricky over at the Tackle Shop at H&M Atlantic. The dock count, I got to tell you, is still holding.
Really?
Friday, the day and a half boats, there were seven out, 168 anglers, 3.3 fish per stick with 437 yellowtail, 114 bluefin, four Dorado, and one marlin was caught and released.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Marlin?
Yeah.
How big was the marlin, does it say?
I don't know. Historically, they'll be 6 feet long.
Yeah,
Now that had to be a line.
Oh yeah, on a party boat. Oh yeah, yeah. And then the one day boats. There were five out, 106 anglers, 22 bluefin, 246 yellowtail, 19 Dorado, 2.7 fish per stick was their ratio. But you know the day and a half boats run down a little bit further than the day boats do, obviously. They had four Dorado. The day boats in closer had 19, so kind of gives you, you know, an idea of what's going on. And then yeah. I don't have the day and a half total for yesterday, but the one-day boats, 213 anglers. Again, they had seven boats out, 45 bluefin, and 278 yellowtail, and also the Dorado, 17. So that's about 1.6 fish per stick. Still holding. Still holding really good. And
what's it usually run, Don, to take a day boat?
Time you get through fiddling around, $300.
Yeah, that ain't bad.
You know, unless you get into the beer cooler on board.
Why would we would never do that?
No. I came to fish. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then the other big news, dove season.
Oh, September 1 today.
Yeah.
I forgot. Absolutely.
Boom.
Yeah, they're hard to hit with a bow and arrow, aren't they?
Just ask my arm.
Oh, man.
Holy crap.
So let's visit a little bit. You had a dignitary in the woods yesterday?
I did. I received a phone call, and Congressman Matt Salmon has a deer tag. And
sweet.
Asked for a little bit of help because I happen to know that area fairly well. And
that's like your backyard.
I know. You know, now he knows. But it was a nice day. He's an incredibly accessible person. I mean, there's no airs, there's nothing. He's just genuine. He would fit very well in this grouping. I know our politics are very, very similar. Don't have to look that. It's okay. He would agree with this group.
I'm just going to slide right on by that one.
Yep. And genuinely a fun guy and who really, really cares about what he does. He's probably one of the – I think that's what we need to do. We need to make a requirement that anybody who wants to work in Congress has to take a pay cut from what they're currently doing.
Wow.
He did.
That's commitment right there.
Sure. And quite frankly, I think there's a whole lot of people who want to get to Congress just for one reason at all, and that's build their resume, make the easy bucks, you know, be the grander that you have, et cetera, et cetera. And he was none of the above. A genuinely great guy, and quite frankly, very good shape because he was able to hang with me up and down all the way.
Yikes! Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're like following a billy goat around. To be real honest with you. That's a good thing, by the way.
Looking, man, billy goat.
I'm telling you, I've been out hiking with him. And
can't
like,
we just say goat? Why do we have to say Billy Goat?
And then you have to go, oh, Billy Goat.
Did I get your goat?
Yeah.
Never mind.
So, but he's obviously under a lot of stress these days because of what's going on in the Capitol. And I just was thrilled and honored to be able to help him for a day, and I'll be helping him tomorrow.
Outstanding.
And you know, hopefully we can bag a deer.
Well, you're in a good area, most certainly. See any horses while you're up there?
Do you think?
I'm just curious.
You know, I made the comment to the congressman that, you know, he does a lot of work with China. He's fluent in Mandarin, which is, you know, a dialect within China. And I said, when we pulled up, there were, you know, like 8 horses within 15 yards of us broadside. And they could care less. Everything else, one sees a vehicle, runs. But the horses know that, you know, basically they're like giant pets out there. And I looked at him, I said, see that? 15 yards broadside. And I said, however, look at it this way. 400,000 tons of that goes to China for food every year. He says, you know, I've had it there. He said, it's not bad. Just so you know.
Nice. So.
I've eaten horse. It's good.
Well, Jack in the Box can't be wrong.
I want a burro. I want a burro burrito.
You know, in China, though, they raise dogs.
I know.
And eat them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a hairless dog, and they actually raise them like cattle to eat.
Well, I'll share my cookbook with you, 101 Ways to Walk Your Dog.
That's true.
Not a problem. All righty. Having said that, I'm about to get in trouble here, so let's thank some of our sponsors, and we'll talk about Bill at Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram when we come back. I'm Don McDowell with
Bill Rulli,
John Colazar,
and Mac Dictionary over here. Doug's in the house. Good morning, Douglas. We'll be back. And the lights of Vegas. All right, we're back hanging out with J.K., rubbing shoulders with the Congressman Salmon, and Bill Rulli getting locked and loaded to head to the up to Meade for the U.S. Open. What day are you heading out?
I'll be leaving Thursday. I won't be able to pre-fish till Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, so. That's good. When's the official off limits?
Sunday, the 8th, and then tournament's 9th, 10th, and 11th.
Bam!
Yeah. Boy, I'm glad it's next week and not this last week.
They have
just gotten hammered with the rain up there. I mean, one day they had 2 inches in a couple of hours. I mean, it was bad.
Well, my guess is correct. You're going to have a little bit of everything going on up there with, you know, with the weather patterns moving in and out. You know, crankbaits, top water, this water, that water. You know, if you
like I said, it's going to be a lot of junk fishing.
Able to fish your strengths, though. I think.
Yeah, I think the weights are going to be more because this next week it's all going to be clearing up. I mean, as far as the weather, looking at halfway decent weather, like I just checked.
You're thinking 12, 15 pounds a day.
I'm thinking 15 a day.
Really?
I don't think we'll go over 15.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the winter last year was like 42 pounds. Yeah. You know, so, I mean, it's just... And I think
are you going to target largemouth or go after the smallies?
I'm definitely going to target largemouth, but yeah, I love catching smallies. You know, you got to remember that it's a tournament, and you know, I'm going to be looking for those 4-pounders. But,
yeah, man.
But... I love to just catch smallies.
Well, I don't want to talk about your plan. Wouldn't do that because, you know, he wouldn't tell us the truth anyway.
Oh, no.
No, I mean, my plan isn't based on any knowledge I have of the lake. It's just what I learned last year.
This is, seventh or eighth open you fished?
Yeah.
What's the best you've ever done in a tournament?
Out of 120 boats, I was like 54th, I think. Yeah, I run with the middle of the pack.
Well, that's not bad. You have to understand there's some of the best fishermen in the West, some of the best fishermen in the country are going to pop up there.
That's true. Yeah.
Clifford Perch.
Like I said, I'd beat Rick Klein a couple of years, and you know, I'd got nothing to be ashamed of. I mean,
that's what he put on his resume.
I beat Rick Klein.
That's all you need to know.
Take that.
Well, everybody's beatable. You know, it's like going out hunting. I mean, you go out and
one day you choose the right spot.
19 days, don't see anything. Pull up 3 minutes out, boom, it's over.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. What's going to be your biggest threat, your biggest competition?
As far as the person. Yeah. The biggest threat is the five fish.
Yeah.
You know.
They are threatening you, aren't they?
Winston Churchill said it best. We have met the enemy.
It is us.
It's me.
No, you know, it's they've got so many superstars up there. It's, you know, I just, if I'm in the top 25, I'm going to feel like I did really well this
year. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know. Yeah, I did finally hook up with Richie Tauber. He's going to be there.
Oh, he called you?
Yeah, we've been talking back and forth.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think he's going to crash with us on Friday night. But he's, you know, you told me his hair grew back.
Really?
Yeah, he's back to fixing his own hair. All right. That's not a bad thing.
Oh, the mullet.
Yeah, he's got a mullet going on.
No, Rich is such a fun guy, and he's an awesome fisherman. You know, I know the last couple of years he had to struggle, you know, to even get there and fish it.
But what about, Belden going up?
No, Doc's not going. But
Doc has wimped.
Yeah. Right. But, I mean, you got to give Rich Tauber a lot of credit. I mean, you know, this is the 31st year of the U.S. Open, and he's fished every one of them.
Well, the last couple of years, about 2 years ago, he's on his deathbed, made it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this guy's remarkable, you know. And he still, I think, came in like 18th, you know. And even as when he was,
you know, we talk a lot about stuff getting inside your head. Have you got jitters yet?
No, not at all. You know, I'm like I said, I'm going with the attitude. It's like, hey, it's great to be here. I'm going to try to catch my five fish a day, and hopefully they're big ones.
Yeah.
And,
can I ask a question?
Sure.
How do you get jitters fishing?
Well, when you're fishing for $100,000,
I understand money's involved.
Generally, you know, it's. Being able to get your head in the game, and a lot of guys don't get it. They don't take it real seriously, you know, and I wasn't one of those. It's just like everything, it's got a starting line and a finish line. And come about Wednesday, you start going through the tackle, messing around with rods and reels. Oh, you do it. You do it every time.
Well, you know.
No matter how prepared you are, here's what he's going to do. He's going to be ready when he leaves.
Yep.
He's going to get there. He's going to go high five. The dock talks are going to start. The big guns are showing up. And here's a snake in a bag over here, some young gun, and it's happened.
Oh, yeah.
That nobody's heard of, and he just kicks everybody's butt. So you're looking at, you know, doing your reconnaissance. And then you go unload your boat, unload the truck. You'll have everything you own all over the hotel room, and you're going to go through for the third time the stuff that you just went through two times in order to get there. Then he's going to start playing with rods and reels. You tie this on, tie that on.
Oh, what's your starter bait?
I'm
going up with the plan that, hey, I know what worked last year.
Yeah.
I know where I made my mistakes last year, and I've rectified those, and I'm ready to go. But when I get up there and I fish for the second day and I'm like, this ain't working.
Uh-huh.
Then my head will start spinning. You know, it'll be, okay, what do I got? I got to do something. I got to do this. Got to do that.
Yep.
You know, boom.
Then it starts.
And then I'm done.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Then the panic sets in. Yeah, you know, you go out there with a 99% level of confidence.
Yep.
One day on the lake, 4 hours on the lake will turn that upside down. You go out there and fish your butt off. Not get a bite.
Been there, done that.
Well, what am I doing now?
Lake Mead is very humbling.
It is. It's a very humbling lake.
Because, yeah. I mean, I've seen guys that you just think, oh, my God, they're superstars, and they come in with two fish. And you're like, really? You know, I caught my five, or I caught four out of my five. But, you know, you see these guys do this, and you're like, wow, their boat break down or something? And it's like, no.
Well, there's a fish god. You start thumping your chest before competition.
Bad idea.
Don't do that.
It's interesting because this is like my eighth year or seventh year. Anyway, but it's always, you always hear the guys at the bar or, you know, in the
bar talk.
In the restaurant or whatever, on the dock. But they sit there and they go, and I remember there's two guys last year from New Mexico. Oh, we found this hump. It's holding tons of fish. We just whacked them in practice. And it's like, well, I'm thinking, first off, why are you whacking them in practice?
Exactly.
You know? And then the second off, they're telling me they're going to win the tournament or probably be in the top five. And I'm like, wow. And I mean, these guys, they had major sponsors. I don't even know who they were, but they had major sponsors, and they brought out all their brand new rods, taking the plastic off of them. And I mean, the day of the awards thing, well, it was like the second day into the tournament, they weren't talking at all. The third day when they pulled in from the lake, they grabbed their suitcases, threw them in their truck, didn't even hang around for the awards.
Yeah. Because
they were so embarrassed of all the talk they did.
Fish God got them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Always better to understate than to overstate.
Keep your mouth shut. Keep your head in the game. Just go fish.
I understand.
Johnny Johnson did that to me last year. He said, man, I didn't catch a fish today. And I'm like, really, Johnny? And he's like,
Yeah, you gotta watch it.
Yeah, and then he could have, I don't know, like 10th place or something.
Gotta watch it.
That's called sandbagging.
Liar, pants on fire. Yeah. All righty, we're going to stand down when we come back. We're going to have a little bit more discussion with Andy Manal.
Yep,
the snapper. I'm Don McDowell with
John Colazar.
And viva Las Vegas.
Elvis has left the building.
All righty, we have moved on. Can't get Andy on the phone. We'll hopefully get back to him after a bit. So, back on your strategy and your planning, you know, we've all been there and done that. And I don't care how many times you've been to a particular lake. Are you mapping? Or are you studying old notes?
Yeah. Most of the notes I have in my head, but yes, I am studying my map. I've got my map out. I've found some areas, actually, that I've been looking for, that I've pre-fished or fished 7 or 8 years ago when I fished AAA, and I didn't know anything about the lake at all. And there's a certain couple of spots that I've looked and looked and looked, and I just cannot find them. Those spots. I mean, I know the lake level changed and everything else, but the stuff I'm looking at should have still been there. And it was, you know, like an island. And anyway, going over the maps this last week, I was like, well, there it is, dummy. You know, but that lake is so big, and there's so much there. You know, like I said, I'm glad it's this week and not last week, because, you know, that the first year I fished as a AAA, that's when we hit those 70-mile-an-hour sustained winds and brought the cranes down on Hoover Dam and come through the basins. It was just murder. I thought we were going to lose a brand new Triton.
What was the water level last year? Do you recall?
No, I don't.
Because right now we're actually 100. I do too know this. Last year at the same time, I think you're 143 feet below full pool. This year it's up 20 feet. You're
123 feet.
Yeah, 123.4 below full pool. Full pool for Lake Mead's 1229 elevation, and right now it's 1105.6.
Well, that's good news.
So it's...
I'm thinking the fish...
At least it's consistent.
I think the fish are going to be shallow. I really do. There's going to be a lot of shallow fish this year.
Why?
Why? Because with the grass and the... You know, bushes and stuff.
Where it's come back up from the previous year where vegetation grew.
Yeah, it's got a lot more structure. And then also, I think the stained water is going to make them feel safer. And the water level coming up, I think they're going to be moving up.
Well, you know me, there's always shallow fish, and we'll go find them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's shallow fish in every lake. But, I mean, I just think it's just going to be exceptionally good this year.
How about Dwayne? Where's his head right now?
His head for the last month is just getting there. He wants to get there so bad. He's counting the minutes. I mean, that poor guy, he's so excited. He's so excited to go. But, you know, Dwayne can adapt. And you know, I'm the type of guy that I'll kind of put something in my mind, and this is what I'm going to do.
We call it stubborn.
Yeah.
Hard-headed.
No, not really. It's
locked just, and loaded.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Dwayne can adapt on a, you know, on the turn of a...
Fishing AAA, you have to be extremely adaptable.
Yeah. And he's
had some good finishes.
Oh, yeah. He's, I think, ninth last year, and I mean, I think he's had a sixth and a seventh, and You know, I mean, he's out of 5 years, he's pulled four checks. So, and he's hoping to do that again this year.
Minimum check covers your down, doesn't it?
No.
No?
Not even close. I think the smallest check on a AAA is like $1,000 or $800.
What's your in on that?
Well, the entry fee is $1,600.
Okay.
And then you figure it's $5,000. I mean, I'm telling you right now, it's $5,000.
It's $5,000.
Just to go up and fish it. By the time if you fuel the boats, and I mean, you're looking at over $100 a day just in fuel.
You've got guys up there, JK, that are fishing for 2 weeks.
You know, I love
getting the hang of this. You know, and it's
and they still can't pre-fish that whole lake.
No, you can't. You know, but it's $50 to $75 a day in fuel and oil, and you know, your per diem on your rooms and meals and truck fuel.
It's more expensive than a darn country club.
Oh, man, it's a killer.
And then that Sunday, that off limits day, it's like the mad rush to Bass Pro.
Oh yeah.
You know, for the last minute stuff. Everybody's like, oh, this worked at practice. I got to go get some more. I remember one year I had a particular worm that was really working well. I was the first one in the Bass Pro Shop. I waited for the doors to open. I went in and bought every one of them off the shelf.
How many of those bags do you still have?
Yeah, I still got a bunch of them.
Yeah. You know, we've all done that at least one time. Cruiser was on just a stupid bite up at Lake Pleasant and Paul's Hideaway. He had watermelon, red flake. Mm-hmm. Worms or crawdads, whatever it was, same thing.
Yeah,
heard the dock talk. Left the boat and the trailer up at the lake. Scooted down to Sportsman's Warehouse, made another pass by Fisherman's Choice, and had every bag that both those stores had. Never caught a fish.
Serves right.
I would keep my sales receipt. Okay, wait a minute. If you buy all these bags up and they don't work, you're still left with the original you put on your hook, correct?
Yeah.
Keep your sales receipts, boys. Those are all going back for returns on Monday.
Oh,
morning.
No, you just put them in your tackle.
Yeah, that's where you get all these things you need to go through for the next tournament. You know, it's like.
No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
no.
Yeah, we're not that smart. Yeah, okay. Yeah, pretty much.
You know, I was thinking about watching him. I mean, yeah, our boy Bill here is just jacked to the gills. And if he were to win this thing,
oh my God,
I don't know that this room could hold him.
No, you know what? If I win this thing, I'm quitting my day job. And I'll
buy another boat.
Buy another boat.
Wish I had a boat.
Well, actually, I'll win that boat. I'll win the Nitro that they're giving away up there.
That would be sweet.
Nah, like I said, if I'm top 25, I'll still be doing backflips. I'll be real happy.
How's your head when they go into the pairing?
You know, boy, that's one thing about the pairing, and it really upsets me is, I mean, I know a lot of these guys, I mean, they come to fish with Rick Klund. They come to fish with Byron Velvic or Aaron Martins or one of the big boys, you know. And when they draw a guy like me, it's like, hey, we're going to go have fun, catch fish, you know. They're like, their head is like already disappointed because I'm not a superstar. You know what I'm saying? But the other thing is, it bothers me, is when you draw somebody that can't back a boat down in the water. And it makes it so hard because you got to get there about a half an hour before anybody else because the dock isn't, or the ramp isn't that big. So you're tying up the ramp. You know, last year I had a guy drive over the curb, almost took out a fire hydrant with my boat trailer. And I'm like, really, buddy? And then I had one just flat, just said, I ain't driving it. I ain't doing it. And it just makes it so hard on the pro that, you know, I just think it should be a requirement that the AAAs know how to back a boat.
I have a question.
One would think so.
I have the look of consternation about me now. You're talking about the draw. Are you a co-fisherman?
No. Well, I mean, it's basically it's combined weight.
Yeah,
he's
on the pro side.
I'm right. On the pro side.
And then you draw your...
Your amateur.
Amateur, no boater, triple A, whatever.
Every day it's different. You get a different triple A.
Okay, now I understand.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, so, you know, I've had some really good draws in the past, but I've had some really crummy ones, too. I had a crummy one when I was fishing my first U.S. Open as a AAA. He had this old beat up boat. I don't know how they even let him into this thing. It had one of the old Mercury Mariners on it, and I mean, we're all the way up in halfway to Greg's, and we're trying to get back for the weigh-in, and it's like he tries to take off, and the boat's taking off, and it's just not going fast enough to get up on plane. He says, you need to get up on the bow. You need to lay on the bow. And I'm like, what? He says, you need to get up on the bow and lay on the bow. So
Bill Ballas Rui.
So it's going to be a long day, Tater.
We get up on the, or I get up on the bow, and the doggone boat gets up on plane, runs fine for about 3 or 4 minutes. Boom, it dies. So the same thing all over again. I kept having to climb up on the bow of this guy's boat on his trolling motor right at the very end and lay across this thing to get this thing to get up on plane. Oh, and I was like, who let this guy in here? You know, I understand everybody had mechanical problems, but his boat was really.
We easy. All do. If you have a bass boat, you're going to see the mechanic.
Yeah, well, that was a piece of crap. So, but.
You know, I just thought of a great prank. You know, have all the pros and to have a co or a triple A. Have her be a supermodel, come down, and just watch the guys.
Oh, there's a couple good-looking gals that fish the tournament on the AAA side. But, you know, my friend Jeff Martineau, he drew one of the guys from Japan because they have guys from Japan that come fish.
Serious?
Oh, oh yeah. We got a guy that comes every year from Australia. But anyway.
Is there a language barrier?
Well, the thing is, the Japanese guy comes with a translator. But the one bass rules, the translator's not allowed on the boat.
Oh, no.
So, you're talking about an awkward day.
Of, time, no, man. No.
Oh, yeah,
no.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've seen some of these guys. We had one of them back at, what the hell was it, Neely Henry? First time in a bass boat. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they finally had to put a driver with that boy.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's funny.
Right, straight from Japan, 250 horse, there's a gas pedal. And by the way, it doesn't have a brake pedal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Figure
anyway,
that out.
Anyway, we're going to stand down, thank some of our sponsors, including Bill at Chrysler Jeep and Dodge. There's four ways to save. I'll tell you about that when we come back.
I'm interested.
Okay.
I'm looking for a car.
Okay. I'll let the cat out of the bag.
I'll let the cat out of the bag, too.
All right. Then
we'll
be back.
Looking for a car?
I should be.
Weatherman said hot and getting hotter, but he didn't say nothing about it. Raining like hell.
Yeah. Always. All righty. Hey, great tune, Jennifer. All righty, Bill. So would you go over to the dealership today? Here's the
I'm going to stop today, but I need to get her down there. Because,
okay.
We say her. The audience doesn't know. Her is my daughter's just back from South Korea.
Her name is Alex.
And
she's a cop for the Air Force.
Right. And, well, security forces. Anyway.
Whatever. It's still a cop.
Yeah. A badge and a gun. Anyway.
And an attitude.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. Anyway, she's looking to get into something brand new, because she's getting stationed in New Mexico for at least 6 months, and then she'll probably be deployed out of there.
Cool.
So anyway, I need to get down and see Mr. Don Luke or one of the boys.
Well, at our dealership, this is the biggest sale of the year. You will find employee pricing, all kinds of factory incentives, cash back, 0% financing and no payments for 90 days.
Well, see, I also have. I don't know the amount, but she's in military, so she gets
a military discount.
Well, yeah, but she gets also like $500 or $1,000, something like that. I remember when I bought my Chrysler down there, and I think it was $1,000 I got off because I was a veteran, which is just a smoking good deal, you know. And it wasn't. Let me tell you, when they sit there and say, okay, you're a veteran, going to give you this $1,000 off. It isn't a game, a song and dance. Because I already made my deal, and I told them I was a veteran. Well, the thing is, they said, okay, write us a check for $1,000, and we'll give it back to you when you come in with your DD-214 that shows that you were actually in the military. So it's not like, oh, tell me you're in the military and you get $1,000 off, and they really don't take $1,000 off. They really do.
Yeah, they really do.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
If you wrote them a check for $1,000.
And they gave it back to you.
You're still at zero. There's
okay.
no discount there.
Okay, you're right. you're right.
Do I have to be the
I think what they
reason
did.
Reason and logic
No,
now.
Because I financed the car, they went ahead and put it on the contract. Okay, $1,000 discount.
So they gave it to you up front, but requested $1,000 on top of that.
Right,
so
or I could have ran home and got my DD-214 and came back, but I told them I wouldn't be able to come back till the next day. So
I'm confused.
Consternation look.
Wow. Well, there's up to $10,258 of savings in some cases. I mean, we looked at the
good time for you to go get it.
I have a suspicion his prodigy is a little bit more astute than he is.
There he goes those big words again, Don. God dang it. No, actually, I was thinking
that,
you
something
know,
you use Preparation H for?
Now, what I mean, what about...
Does it come in clear?
Yeah.
What about trade-ins? I mean, are they doing anything extra on trade-ins? Or
there's a, yeah, with a qualified trade-in, and I don't know what that means. There's up to $1,000 extra dollars on that.
Huh. JK? Hmm.
I'm still thinking about pater familias here.
Really?
You know, I just can't even imagine a deer strapped to the hood of that Prius.
No, but I can certainly see it being dragged along behind it, and I would do that. It's called tenderizing.
Yeah, and saving a lot of money while you're doing it, right?
Hey.
Well, anyway, wrapping this up, you know, if you're interested in buying a vehicle, now's the perfect time. Yep. I'm not going to get any better than it is right now.
Well, I will be
Thursday
down there.
Through, Tuesday, down at the dealership, I-17 and West Camelback Road. Yep.
I'll be there 9:15.
Okay, cool.
You know, that 90 days without any payments, that's amazing. Although, on the downside, as you're coming near the end of your term on that, and it dies 90 days before you're finished paying, you go, oh, darn.
Yeah.
I'm really in a tight spot now.
Yeah, it's all good. All right, so what's the plan for you and the congressman tomorrow morning?
There's a couple spots that I've had with really good success, big basins that we can glass. The problem, believe it or not, this year is that the vegetation is so thick that literally they get lost in the vegetation. You have to lock and load on them and at all times be ready to look at it. It's hard to do. Yeah. So I don't know. We're going to see what happens, but there's a couple places I was seeing body parts of deer because they were so in thick that you know, I pick out a leg, a tail, a head, you know, that kind of thing.
All right. We've got Andy Manal. Hey, Andy, what are you doing, brother?
Hey, good morning, boys. How's everything going down there?
Oh, we're just sitting here kicking Rulli around on the U.S. Open. Are you ready to go?
I am. I was up late last night with a headlamp on, going through rod lockers, putting some new bearings in some older spools, and buttoning down the hatches. We're ready.
How many times have you done that? We were just hacking on Bill. You know, he's going to do it two more times once he gets up there.
Oh, we're like savant idiots at sometimes. I mean, we just go through stuff over and over and over. And
does the term OCD mean anything?
No, you know, I think they ought to have a cocktail waitress running around the roof of that parking garage up there. You know, the guys are out there
working
all night.
Dream on.
Well, we got lucky this year. Instead of being on a roof of a casino garage, I am moored to a 70-foot houseboat right in Colville Bay with one of the best anglers in the country. We've got Rick Klun right next to us, and I'm sharing my houseboat with Mike Folkstead. So I'm really, really looking forward to this trip.
Hey, Andy, you got room for me to tie up a boat?
You know what? I think we got one extra bunk, so and then we got the whole top of the houseboat, so come on down.
Okay.
Wow, there you go, Bill.
Yeah, we were discussing the fact that, you know, last year I drew somebody that couldn't back a boat trailer and Uh-oh. Just totally refused to, and you know, having to get there early, put in, because you don't want to tie up the ramp where the guys are trying, everybody else is trying to launch, you know, and it just sure makes it a lot nicer when you have somebody who knows what they're doing.
Well, this year it's going to even be busier. We got a full field this year. I think we're up to on Friday, we had 140 boats signed up and paid,
wow.
And I think we might be able to squeak 10 more out. So it's been a while since we've had a full field in the U.S. Open, and
I think
really looking forward to it.
I think last year we had like 124 or something.
120, I think we started with 126, and then we had three drop out, two with mechanical issues, and then somebody had a death in the family. So, yeah, this year is going to be great. We got a lot of guys from Labina Lures that are going to be representing Jennifer and Rico, and it's exciting time.
Andy, what's your biggest concern going into the Open?
Biggest concern is probably just getting a good boat draw. I mean, Mike Folkstad and I were talking about this the other night. Getting to your fish is going to probably be the main concern. If you get a late boat draw on day one of the U.S. Open is the most critical day. It's staying in the game. I mean, you can definitely shoot yourself in the foot on day one. It's hard to make up ground on these guys.
Done that.
With all the anglers. I mean, if you stay in the game on day one, you're in good shape, but you can definitely put yourself out of contention immediately.
Andy, let me ask you this. You've been there, done that. You've got the best of the best you're palling around with, and you certainly are in that category. What's your biggest confidence level going into this game?
Well, just knowing what it takes, the mental preparation. 3 days fishing on Lake Mead is a grind for anybody. I don't care who you are. It is just to be mentally tough out there. I've been going to the gym, staying in good shape. I've been working on hydrating myself for the last couple of weeks. You just have to be prepared going to Lake Mead. There's so many adverse conditions, not just the fishing, but everything else that goes in with it. It's the heat. It's the weather. It's the grind on your body. I mean, when you get done fishing Lake Mead in the U.S. Open, you need 2 days of recuperation time where you're just doing nothing but rehydrating yourself when you get back home and laying around, because it is tough. I mean, it's tough on you.
Well, I'm sure looking forward to it this year. My confidence level is a lot higher than what it's been. You know, I've always been a contributor. You guys need guys like me.
Well, the cool thing this year is last year they had the live webcast, so people that don't really know what a U.S. Open is all about, they'll be able to see it on the internet and tune in live and stream, and so it's going to be really neat for just the participation for people that couldn't make it or were on the fence about it. When you get to see the Costa Del Mar live presentation, the webcast, it's going to be pretty cool. It helps give us anglers a lot of exposure on the web.
All right, hey man, we're going to keep an eye on you. If there's anything you need, anything we can do for you, give us a holler, and good luck to you. And
Andy, I'll see you up there, buddy.
All
right, guys.
Give Grandpa Mike my regards. Old guys rule. Hoorah.
It's time for Shake, Rattle, and Troll, a show for the serious fisherman, as well as the novice looking for tips from the pros. Shake, Rattle, and Troll is brought to you by Bill Luke Dodge Chrysler Jeep. Now, here's your host, saltwater fisherman and tournament pro, Don McDowell.
All righty, hey, we're back. I'm Don McDowell. This is the second hour of Shake, Rattle, and Troll today. We've got Bill Rooley headed to the U.S. Open for the eighth year in a row.
Eighth year.
You're a good man. Up at Lake Mead, one of the toughest lakes we've got. J.K.'s in the house, president of the Arizona Deer Association, and joining us online is Jim Collier, author of Blood in the Tracks. Jim, how are you today?
Oh, real good. How are you doing, Don?
We're having too much fun. You know, we've got archery deer season's open.
Amen.
Dove season open today. We've got the saltwater side of life, the yellowtail and bluefin are blowing up, so there's lots of things to do.
It's all good.
You know, I'm glad to have you. I wanted to thank you publicly for taking the time to author Blood in the Tracks. What an outstanding manifesto on hunting the mule deer.
Thank you.
Well, we've got an awful lot of guys looking and reading in that, and everybody gets a little something different out of it. As I emailed you, my son and his son, my eldest grandson, took their first archery buck, and after reading your book, I mean, they were fired up anyway, but man, that just set those guys ablaze. And JK out here is kind of...
Jim, I got to talk to you. We might as well do it on the air. okay, I'm guiding somebody, helping somebody. I'm not guiding because I'm not getting paid, but I am guiding. And one of the questions that I have is that we're picking up, you know, bucks at first light. They're 1,000 yards out. Do you try and move in on them, or do you want to wait till they bed? Because yesterday we waited till they bed, and it worked out pretty well. We almost got to the point where we wanted to be, and some things kind of fell apart on us. But do you find, do you let them bed and then try and come on behind them? And how big a circuit? Because we would have had to have done a five-mile circuit to get to them. We're in a huge basin.
You know, that goes individually on the deer. If the deer is feeding slowly and you have time to get out in front of it, well, by all means, make a stalk right now. If you don't have the ability to get out in front of the deer undetected, you're always better off letting them bed. And even if it takes an hour or two to get on them, to go after it that way. A lot of the stalks we've made, believe it or not, have been 2, 3, even 4 hours to get on top of the deer. It just depends. I like it when you can get on them in 15-20 minutes, but sometimes the terrain and the movement of the deer just doesn't allow that.
Yeah, we're in a big basin. The basin that we're in is really significant. Here's the other thing too, and that is that we had a huge fire up there 10 years ago, and the vegetation now has grown to the point where it's, you know, basically over my head in many spots, which means that deer are just having an absolute ball because they can bed down in a clump of trees and you can't see them until you're on top of them. And of course, they're long gone by then.
Yeah, and then they take 2 or 3 bounds and you can't see them anyway because the brush is too high. That's always a huge problem. You know, the deer tend to like areas where it's very hard to see them in. And if we hunt in those areas, it's very hard to kill a deer in there. So you kind of have to wait to where they can come out and you can get a poke at them.
Yeah. They're not grazing much during the day. There's, you know, the middle of the day and the heat of the day. We're up into the 80s up there. And they're tending to stay bedded. But I saw that they got to bed late yesterday. I mean, it was almost 8 o'clock before they started to bed down. But when are they, you know, do you find it like the hour before sunset that they start just poking around?
Yeah, you know, and usually if it's a really big bucks, and of course that's probably what we're talking about because that's what everyone dreams of is like, you know, they want that real trophy head. And they tend to be even more nocturnal than the rest of the deer. They'll be the last ones to get up in the evening. My best luck as far as evening and hunting big mule deer, especially this time of year, I mean, it's the last shooting light is when you see them. You've got to be really patient.
Okay, that helps.
Sometimes they'll get up a little bit earlier, but a lot of times all the rest of the deer that they're hanging out with or general vicinity are up feeding, and then you can catch that great big one, get a glimpse of him just in that gray light right before the street lights come on. Of course, we don't know, there's no street lights up there, but
no. Starlight.
Yeah, I've always had much better luck on mule deer early in the morning, simply because they tend to be a little bit more visible, and they're heading to bed. You know, you've got about an hour, 20. Well, right now you probably have about an hour after it gets daylight before they bed down. You know, as the season wears on, we get into the middle of October in that area. You'll have like 20 minutes because of the reduced amount of daylight.
Yeah, and right now they're not feeling the pressure. Nobody's shot anything yet. It's archery season, so it's a little bit easier. They're not as on guard as they are after the first shot's fired.
Yeah, but by gosh, trying to get within archery range of a big mule deer buck is not for the faint of heart, let me tell you.
JK, what kind of...
separates the wheat from the chaff.
You mentioned, JK, you're in a basin. Has that got a lot of scrub oaks intermingled with...
Intermingled with some little PJ, some manzanita, some of those thorn... I call them worse than God thickets, you know, where the thorns are real long.
Wait a minute, bushes.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait a minute longer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They eat all that stuff. Probably the oak is the big attractant.
Well, we have a great acorn mass crop. It looks like every small oak tree that I saw, and these have all come up in the last 10 years, so they're about 6 feet high now, and those things are just abundant with acorns. I mean, there's a whole lot of acorns, so I know we're in the right church.
Oh, yeah.
Just have to find the right pew.
Yep, just have to be patient, and I've always believed that patience and watching is the key to this. Too often the hunter is so excited to get out there and go hunting that he just starts charging out into the brush somewhere, or I'm just going to go walk over here and take a look. You always are better off if you can find where you want to hunt and then find a vantage point where you can watch it.
Glass.
Yeah, and you get an idea of where especially the deer you want to make a play on, where he's moving, where he's comfortable walking through. Now, they don't have distinct trails that they're going to follow, every day right in the exact same footprints.
No.
Sometimes it seems like they do that, but usually, it can be 100 yards here or it can be 400 yards down there. And so if you can watch them for a couple of days, you get a good idea of where they're moving. And you might have to wait 2 days for them to come back down on that trail because he might cross just out of range. And then the next, and you move down there and the next day he's right up where you were at before. So if you get a good, vantage point and you glass these deer and you see the general vicinity where they're moving through, pick the best place where you think you can get a shot and a place you can get into undetected. And then it's just going to be a waiting game because, if you stay calm and quiet and remain undetected, within a couple of days, usually something will come by in range where you can get a poke at it.
Jim, one of the things I found, I found a lot of things pretty interesting, but one of the issues you talk about is being where the deer are way before early light, which in a lot of cases means, you're taking off and doing a 2 to 3 hour hike to get to where you're going. How much credence do you put in that, John?
I believe that you have to be in position at first light, and that means serious. You're sitting there for 10 minutes, and it's not gray light, it's dark.
Dark.
Yeah, and if you can get in there and then be set up so that at first light you're not moving at all, because they pick up movement like nothing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and in a big basin like that, they can see for 2 miles. They can pick you off.
That and one of the other issues, we have a lot of desert terrain here locally where we are, and I found it pretty interesting. You keyed in on the rocky bluff.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Looking down.
So let me ask you a question. How long will you sit there before you get your first shot? Could it be hours?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now, I know you're a smoker. Do you smoke while you're sitting there?
Nope.
Oh, okay, I'm just curious about that.
Never touch it. Never, ever. Not on my clothes, not on anything.
Okay, I was just curious because I'm not a deer hunter, but I would think a deer would be able to detect it.
Jim, we've got to flip into a break here. Can you hang with us while we thank some of our sponsors?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, I'm Don McDowell with
John Colazar,
Phil Burley,
and Jim Collier, author of Blood and Tracks, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
Riding the rock.
All right, we're back visiting with author Jim Collier, Blood and Tracks, the Mule Deer Manifesto. I would highly recommend, if you are a hunter, you need to read this book. Jim, I want to divert a little bit from the mule deer issue. As you and I have mentioned a little bit, we're right in the firefight with the feds and the Center for Biological Diversity, Defenders of Wildlife, on the wolf issue. Have you encountered any issues with wolves in your area?
Oh, my gosh, yes. What happened was, up in Idaho, they decided that they were going to accept some funding from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Kiss of death.
Under the guise that they were going to reintroduce the gray wolf. But basically what they did, there really was no wolves to speak of in the area. We always had a couple of lobos, lone wolves, running around. And they brought in 23 wolves and planted them. And, it's had a major effect on deer and elk populations. Up here, we haven't had any trouble that I know of as far as domestic livestock yet. However, in southern Idaho, I saw that last week there was roughly 170 sheep killed in a corral by a pack of wolves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was that panic where they crushed each other. Some of them got hamstrung and they were bitten. I think it was like 36 had teeth marks on them where the wolves had just gone nuts. It was only two wolves. And then the rest crushed each other.
But the wolves really didn't go nuts. That's in their makeup.
That's their nature.
A wolf kills animals a lot similar to how a squirrel stows away nuts for the winter. They will if they can kill a herd of antelope or deer or whatever. They'll do it, and then they'll keep coming back, especially when you get in the fall towards winter, because the meat tends to freeze and last longer. In the winter, they get on the snow, they'll wipe out whatever they can because it'll freeze, and then they can come back and feed on it as it thaws out. So they actually, when they go in there, it's not like wanton killing. They're actually harvesting and in an attempt to store this meat for later. Of course, most of it rots. They never get to it. But so our impression is that they're wanton killers. I'm sure what their genetic makeup is that this is part of their survival, that they have, you know, when they can kill, they kill. And but bringing them into an area that that doesn't have wolves is devastating. You know, you have to kind of understand the history. It's like, okay, up in North Idaho where they planted these, that was heavily timbered. There was hardly any deer. It was nothing for a guy to go 5 miles without cutting a deer track, you know, 100 years ago. Well, then we came in, we started doing a little logging, a little farming. We started creating a little bit more feed. We got a little more deer, but there was no wolf there. Well, then they bring in wolves, and it's just, you know, sometimes I think if we left Mother Nature up to Mother Nature and didn't try to interfere, we'd all be better off.
Yeah. It's a good thought.
I agree. I know that Yellowstone had the same issues that the Lolo elk herd had, and that was is that they released these. And number one, these aren't the wolves that were in Idaho and were in Montana prior to the turn of the century. These are big Canadian gray wolves that are larger.
Big boys.
Big boys, you know, 150 to 200-pound animals. And they just basically, you know, when they don't feel any pressure or anything else, and you've got that big smorgasbord of elk and deer and bison running around, you know, they did what they did best. They eat, they breed, and they keep eating and keep breeding, and they wound up with over 370 wolves in Yellowstone.
374.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden the bottom falls out because they've eaten themselves out of house and home. They develop mange, and now we're down to more of a natural thing. But the Yellowstone elk herd went from 20,000 animals to below 4,000. That's not the way we
have it. What about the wolf population? I understand that's taken a dramatic decrease just because of the
lack of prey.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're down below. Last I heard, there were about 150 animals in Yellowstone.
Nice.
So, well, where did they go to?
Died. A lot of them died from mange and some of the diseases that were coming in.
Well, you know, the thing is, when I used to hunt up in Canada a lot, when the wolves would come in, the game would move out of that drainage.
Yeah.
And they'd move over to the next drainage. And the wolves moved. They followed the game. And we're seeing that with these wolves up in Yellowstone and the ones that they planted in Idaho. They've been seeing them down in Nevada as far as 100 miles below the Idaho border. There was no wolves planted in Nevada. They have legs. They can move.
Yeah, that's
the
problem.
You're going to lose some to mange, but you're going to have more than you're going to lose to mange and starvation. You're going to have that. The wolves are going to start to disperse. They're going to look for game in other areas. And it's like a Stephen King movie. These people won't even know they're there. It's like a monster living in the basement. And all of a sudden, you're going to have a wolf problem, and you're going to say, well, but they just moved in because they were never here. You know, they have legs. They can cover a lot of miles.
I love the analogy.
No problem doing it.
Yeah, that's a damn good
monster
analogy.
In the basement.
Yep.
Yeah, and it will end up being that way. We've seen it so often when they try to transport or put new animals in an area that they weren't there, it seems fine for the first few years because there's no automatic, distinct, all of a sudden change in the environment, change in the game population. And then as the years go on, then we have a real problem. Sometimes, my sympathy is entirely with the wolf on this. I think they should have left them up in Canada and not pestered them.
Well, you got a point there. We're fighting a fight down here in some of our northeastern communities. Patients starting to wake up and feel the pressure. You know, they're coming to a neighborhood near you, and it's just a matter of when. You know, like you say, they've got legs. They don't read maps real well, so.
So what's the fine for shooting one?
It's about 50 grand.
So this poor rancher that lost all these sheep, he
can't do anything.
No, he's done. James, I want to thank you for joining us and hope you'll join us again in the future. Right now we've got
anytime.
A new roll call that we're overdue on. So, folks, here's the roll call. We're going to honor three soldiers that gave it up last week. For the week of September 1st, first fallen soldiers, Army Private Jonathan Michael Dean Hostetter, died August 23rd, 2013, serving during Operation Enduring Freedom. 20 years old, of Humphreys, Missouri, was assigned to the 2nd Engineer Battalion, 36th Engineer Brigade out of White Sands Missile Range, New Mexico. Died August 23rd in Haftazabad, Afghanistan, of wounds suffered when enemy forces attacked his unit with an IED during combat operations.
Army Specialist Kenneth Clifford Alvarez died August 23rd, 2013, serving during Operation Enduring Freedom. He was 23 of Santa Maria, California. He was assigned to the 2nd Engineer Battalion, 36th Engineer Brigade, out of White Sands Missile Range, out of New Mexico. He died in Haftazabad, Afghanistan, from wounds suffered when enemy forces attacked his unit with an improvised explosive device during combat operations.
Army Sergeant First Class Ricardo Young died August 28th, serving during Operation Enduring Freedom. 34 years old, out of Roston, Arkansas, was assigned to the 738th Engineer Support Company, 307th Engineering Battalion, which is a combat airborne group, 20th Engineer Brigade out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina, died August 28th in Ghazni Province, Afghanistan, after being hit by enemy fire. That's the price this week, guys. Think about it. Our hearts and prayers go out to the families and the units they left behind. I'm Don McDowell. We'll be back. Sun shines, clouds rain. All right, we're back, changing gears, going from a deer hunt over to a fish camp up in downtown Payson with Master Rod Builder James Guggenhauer from Rim Country Custom Rods. James, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Don and John and Bill. How y'all doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Well, we've been to Lake Mead. We've hunted a little deer right now. I got to ask you, did you hear the elk bugling this morning?
I did.
Nice. I heard a bunch this weekend. They're starting to get into it.
Yep, that's for sure. We heard one Wednesday evening, and I got to go actually see it on Thursday morning. And then the monsoons kind of slowed it down a little bit with the rain in the early mornings. But this morning they were out there bugling heavily again. So it's that time of year for sure.
Well, that signifies a lot of good things in store for us. What's the prognosis for Clifford making the open?
Clifford, you're talking about the Bassmaster Classic or U.S. Open?
No, the Open. Is he going to? Well, I know he qualified for the. In fact, all of our guys qualified for the Bassmasters, but is he going to make it up to Mead?
Oh, you bet. You know, he's a two-time winner of the U.S. Open. I know he's headed up there this week. I talked with Matt Shura. I know he's headed up there this week. So there'll be a pretty heavy Arizona entourage up there, I'm sure.
Well, that's a good thing. Before we get into the fishing report, Shoot from the Heart up at the Mountain Bible Church has got a little talk going on about the wolves. What do you know about that?
Right. Thanks for bringing that up, Don. This is, we're trying to get lots of notice out here because we'd like to have good attendance at this. It is Thursday, September 12th at 6 p.m., and it'll be here in Payson, as you said, at the Mountain Bible Church. Steve Smith is a local outdoor writer. He is a mountain lion and bear guide. He lives on a ranch here south of Payson. And he's going to give a talk on the expanding wolf program, the one you were just talking to earlier, and the impact of that on Arizona. So we're telling anyone that hunts or camps or fishes in northern Arizona need to be at this program. So mark your calendars and be sure to be up here on September 12th at 6 p.m.
All right, save me a chair. You want to go?
I'll be blowing by you because I got to be up in Heber so that I can prepare for my next morning's elk hunt. You know that elk tag I have?
Oh, yeah.
Back to you, James.
Should be fun. Hey, let's talk about the fishery report because we have good news this past week.
I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about the turkey and deer tag I have in Missouri.
No.
Okay, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Okay. The we have had monsoon rains. The flow into the lake has increased dramatically. Last week we were talking about the Tonto Inn not having much of an inflow and fishing conditions were a little bit slow on that end. But this week I'm getting good reports from both ends of the lake. Now the water flowing into the lake is pretty much off the top. It's like 400 cubic feet per second this morning coming in on the salt.
Ooh.
200 cubic feet per second coming in on the Tonto end. So lots of good water coming into the lake. The lake remained at 44% full, which is the same as what it was last week. So we're pretty happy with the water. We hope that continues to come in. That definitely has turned the bass fishing on both sides of the lake. The lake was called on fire this past week by local anglers down there. So I have three baits reported for you. And the first most popular bait this week was a soft plastic swim bait. And a specific name would be a Super Fluke, the company. Fished that on a 4-aught Yamaguchi extra wide gap hook.
Now, are they using heavy wire or light wire?
Actually, both. I know that one of the guys fishes all heavy wire.
Okay.
Most of them, I think, I particularly like the light wire, and I think most anglers do. Now, where to fish for those is look for that mud line, you know, where the stained water turns clear. Right along that area is where you want to be using that fluke. It seems like when it comes out of the stained water into the clear water, hold on to your rod because that's about the time you're going to get bit. Second most popular bait was a roboworm on a drop shot. Now, surprising this week, most guys were using darker color worms. We've been talking about translucent color, the morning dawn colors and things like that. But I'm hearing more of the purple colors and the dark brown colors for roboworms.
Yep, dingier the water, John, the darker your bait.
Exactly. Yeah, that one I knew.
Okay, the translucent one's excellent in clear water. And on the light wire versus heavy wire, depending on which hook you use, the light wire is going to fall just a little bit slower.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a little bit more rapid descent, I'd go with a
heavy wire,
a 5-aught heavy wire hook. Yeah.
Yep. The third bait reported was a 7-inch curly tail Berkeley camo worm on a Carolina rig.
Nice.
So this time of year, as we start moving into the late summer. Guys that really like the Carolina rig, they like to drag it down the main lake points and get it into the deeper water. Some of those bigger fish will be hanging down there. So I've heard some pretty good reports on Carolina rigs this week.
How deep were they running those?
30.
Okay.
I was surprised by that, too. Most guys are fishing like 15 to 25 feet of water. But the Carolina Reef guys, you know, they're 30 to 35 feet, and they're catching them there. So
nice.
It tells you that the water temperature is still up there, which it is. It's in the mid-80s in the morning, high 80s in the afternoon. So the summer pattern is still there, but we're starting that transition into the fall. So I think that's why the fish are still being caught deep on Carolina rigs.
Was there a sporadic topwater bite?
You know, it's funny, Don. I have not heard anybody mention that for 2 or 3 weeks. You remember we were talking about that starting, starting the late summer fall bite when they start feeding on the surface?
Yeah, you bet.
Suspended fish out in the middle. But the last couple of weeks, nobody's brought that up. So I don't know if it's just happening for short duration or not happening, but I didn't bring it up in my question, and nobody brought it up in their
report. maybe happening, they just don't want to talk about it.
Oh, no, there's a good point. good time to be at Roosevelt Lake. It's great down there. The weather's good. We just continue to caution people with those monsoons. Well, this last week, I don't know if you guys had it in the valley, but it's like you're driving along and it's sunny, and 10 minutes later, you've got your windshield wipers on full. That's how fast these storms roll in. So telling everybody to be careful out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
James, question, James, is Clifford talked to anybody up at the up at Mead?
I can't tell you that.
Well, I didn't know if you'd heard any rumors if the water's pretty well stained up.
See, Bill, the deal is that if he tells you, then you know what he knows, and he'll have to kill you.
Oh.
Well, the strategy going into Mead for Bill is he just follows Clifford.
Uh-huh.
Stay about a half mile. Make sure you got some good optics.
You know, you're probably – that's not a bad plan.
I got a pair of 15x56s. You can see 2 miles with him.
There you go.
Yeah, you'll be able to see his rooster tail from a long distance.
All right, how about the crappie bite?
Yes. Crappie bite was called fair this past week. Starting to get some reports of better numbers of crappies. Not much has changed as far as locations. Guys are still fishing right in the middle of the brush in 25 to 30 feet of water. But what's changed is the numbers. You know, guys were telling me a couple of weeks ago or maybe 3 weeks ago that they were only catching one or two. Now I'm hearing four or five out of each brush. Now, one of the techniques that Kurt Rambo uses down there is he knows where locations are. So he's constantly moving from one bush to another one and then maybe back to the first one after he lets it settle down for a bit.
Sure.
So that's the technique, but it seems like they're starting to school up. You know, this will happen more as we get into the late fall, winter months, where we get bigger schools of crappie. But we can start to see that happen just based on the numbers that we're seeing that are being caught. So if you find a good bush with some crappie in it, catch a couple out of it, back off it for a little bit, come back 15, 20 minutes later, and you can catch a few more off of it. But, you know, in two or three places is the ideal thing to have. You want to use a small grub tail, 2-inch, on a 1/16 or 1/8 ounce jig head. And, I mean, literally, you've got to feel your way right into the center of that bush because that's where the crappie are going to be.
All right. Any news? Anybody still trout fishing?
Trout fishing. This has to go down as one of the best trout fishing years for our ring lakes. You know, usually this time of year, things start to slow down, and you hear reports about dog days, trout fishing, can't catch any. We haven't experienced that at all this year. So if you got any ideas of going up on the rim to fish the streams or the lakes, go do it. Power baits, again, I mean, just the top bait is always power baits every week.
All right. Good stuff. Good stuff, James. We got to flip into a break. You have a good weekend. I'm serious. Save me a chair. I'll be there on Thursday the 12th to hear the...
You might put it on.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, and that's at the Mountain Bible Church, downtown Payson at 6 p.m. We'll get that posted on the website for you.
Thanks, Don.
All right, have a good weekend. That's it from Rim Country Rods. We'll be right back after a short break.
Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out.
All righty, we're back. We've covered a lot of stuff today. I would encourage you, if you are a hunter, blood in the tracks.
Absolutely.
The Mule Deer Manifesto. That just sounds scary. It is. It's one of the most well-written books. It's got a lot of stuff in it on mule deer hunting. And you can apply a lot of these tactics to elk
and
some of the other things as well. Next week, we'll be talking to Mark Lesang, editor-in-chief of the Bass Angler magazine. Obviously, one of the better bass fishing magazines on the market. You can check that out at Bass Angler Mags .com. Well worth it. What's your tactic now moving into Monday? Let's go back to deer hunting for a minute.
I think we're going to,
with the congressman.
There's two places that I've consistently found bucks. It was funny when we were talking to Jim, it was regarding, you know, where they have been, where they were. Those two bucks I found yesterday morning were within about 300 yards of where they were a year ago.
You know, interesting.
You know, they
same guys.
They looked fairly similar. Last year I thought they were obviously a little smaller. This year they're really in good velvet, and their antlers are bigger. So my gut feel is that I know that there's two other spots that we can visit that have historically held deer for me. And I know it's a big basin, so I know they're in there. The food's there. Nothing else has changed except that it's Labor Day weekend and there's a lot of bodies.
Yeah, there will be. What class of these bucks you were on?
The one that we saw yesterday was in 180 to 190 category, and the other one was 150 to 170.
Close enough.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That one that was a beautiful 4x4, and he was really, really wide. He was at least 26 inches wide.
Whew.
Yeah. Nice buck.
Call that a wall hanger.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he would have been thrilled.
Definitely.
I would have been thrilled.
What's your tactic? You're going to move in way before daylight?
Yeah. I want to be in position within probably 25 minutes of daylight. So that means, you know, being out there about 45 minutes before first light, which is, I think, very easy for us to do. We're fortunate where we're going to be hunting. I know how to get in there without raising a lot of ruckus, and we'll just, you know, park the vehicle near a road, let everybody else know if they're coming down the road not to come in that way, and then walk in, and we've got about a 300-yard walk to where I need to set up, and we can do that with our lighted hats, so we're good.
How far are you having to class?
Generally within a mile. You know, I don't want to go much over 1,000 yards, only because then it plays havoc with all the little cuts and things that you don't see when you're glassing up on top.
Yeah.
And you can run into a world of hurt trying to go 500 yards if it's got four little draws that are real steep and full of brambles and bushes.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, you're hunting in a place where there's a damn few flat spots anyway.
Oh, yeah. There are none. No.
It's either up or down.
Well, unless you walk along the ridge and then you're skylined, and you know that's worthless.
You get
might as
popped.
Well, yeah, yeah, you might as well not even be there.
Yeah, in Jim's book, he spends a lot of time on that particular topic, not skylining yourself, and
no.
You know,
creep in behind bushes. Always keep something between you and where you want to glass.
Absolutely.
And then just ease out into it.
Brother, really good luck to you open.
Wish you well.
Well, thank you, guys.
What do we have that we can do for you?
Don, you've done just about everything.
Send money.
I'll call Fast Tracks and make sure your T-shirts come off the press.
I appreciate that, bud. No, everything you've done, Don, has just been phenomenal. I appreciate it.
Well, you got my hammer shed.
So, you gave him the one?
Yeah. I gave him everything that he asked for. He wanted a...
This and this and that.
I'm not going to let him out of the bag.
Okay. Understood.
No, I want to, and you know, I want to thank
Jim
Brown too, for hooking me up with his new
James Brown.
James, yeah, helping me up with his new super improved Westies, Yeah.
I like that bait.
I do too. I'm so excited to get up and try that. So, but anyway, no, you guys have done above and beyond. I appreciate everything you've done, Don. Thank you.
Well, and if you do fall out of the boat, you have your new MT-100 Mustang.
Yeah, that thing is sweet. I got my old Cabela's one. I says, hey, Dwayne, I'm going to give this one to you. It's all sweaty. Yeah, it's got sweat stains and everything all over it.
Yeah, I've got a red one just like that.
Yeah, it's only been inflated once.
Yeah, just don't put it in the washing machine. That's a bad thing.
Jeez. Rainstorm, that thing goes off.
Okay. And I want to encourage anybody that's an outdoorsman to show up in Payson at the Mountain
Very Life. Informative meeting.
Well, this is going to be pretty – I'm going to look at it this way. This is the first time they've engaged on it. And I think it's
they're about a year behind the learning curve, but that's okay.
I've been in touch with Mayor Kenney relative to what Apache County's been doing to encourage Gila County to get off their duffs and start looking in some of the other counties, like Greenlee County, and oddly enough, La Paz County, clear over on the other side of the state.
Yeah, I can't believe on it.
If you look at that 10J expansion, it goes from
east to west.
East to them.
Yep. They is in the line.
Yeah. And I found it curious that even Jim Collier mentioned, you know, wolves 100 miles inside the Nevada border. We've got wolves in Colorado headed this way.
Now, you told me it's a $50,000 fine to shoot one of those.
Correct. Upon conviction.
Oh, okay. But what if you feel threatened? I mean, say you're...
I feel threatened all the time.
Yeah, well, you know what I'm saying. But, I mean, this thing's staring at you and you don't think it's going to back down. And you got a gun. I'm sorry. I want to shoot it.
I'm just saying. You better hope the hell it's got a curly tail.
Yeah.
Explain that to me.
Well, what we're
finding out.
I don't want to get into this, but here we go. Our
geneticist.
Best guess is that we have a wolf, Mexican gray wolf dog hybrid.
Right.
It's not a pure Mexican gray wolf.
And if that's the case, we've got a geneticist, Professor Matt Cronin from University of Alaska, finishing up independent DNA study to look at the genetics and whether it is, in fact or not, a subspecies of the Mexican gray wolf. Depending on the way that goes, may be a moot point.
I mean, we could be shooting dogs.
I guarantee you, if I feel threatened, I am not going to wait for a DNA sample. I'm going to shoot that son of a gun.
Well, this has been happening in New Mexico. There's been a number of court cases. Ranchers justifiably, you know, popping one of these things, and they get into court, and they're convicted of, you know, and they're not denying. Yeah.
I shot it.
I shot it because it was eating one of my
cattle.
Livestock.
Right.
And where the coup de grace is, they're... counsel smart enough to say, okay, wildlife service, you proved that that was not a dog, and they can't produce the genetics or won't.
Oh.
And I know of three cases to that effect. I think there's still another one in court right now. Same thing, same issue.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal in the hunting community, and, you know, Game and Fish is going to have their MOU rolled out September 7th in Pine Top at the commission meeting. You going to that? You going to be up there?
I think I got an antelope hunt that I'm guiding. Nope.
I didn't want to hear that either. I'll think about you when I'm back there in Missouri hunting turkeys.
Oh, that's good because I'll have my tag here. I'm going to have a tag next spring.
I know. What's it cost you to go?
I'll show me your tag if you show me mine.
What's it cost you to go to Missouri to shoot a turkey that you could buy at Fry's for 19 cents a pound?
You cannot buy the experience at Fry's for 19 cents a pound.
$239.
And you still got to pluck all the feathers.
I don't pluck the feathers at all.
And you wait, boil them or what?
Yeah.
Oh, contraire mon ami.
19 cents a pound.
All right, hey, you guys have a great what's left of the Labor Day weekend. Check out Bill Luke Chrysler, Jeep, and Dodge.
That's where I'm going.
Absolutely. Four ways to save down there since 1927.
I should have gone there.
I'm Don McDowell.
John Colazar.
Bill Rooley.
It's not too late. They take trade-ins.
Take the Prius is running.
Yeah, take your kids' fish and hug your basketball. Damn, don't buy a Prius around here. Some like to rock, some like to roll. Me and the boys like to shake.